Oh, go balance your checkbook and stop whining.
How's it hanging? Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and podcast producer at Max Podcasting. And you can email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high quality podcast. This is episode Route 166. And today's guest is Paul Barron. Paul is the founder and CEO of The Wall Printer. Now, you don't need me to tell you that The Wall Printer prints on walls, but you do need me to tell you how fascinating and amazing Paul and The Wall Printer are. He is truly an incredible entrepreneur, and his story of entrepreneurship goes well beyond The Wall Printer, well beyond Wells as well. He stumbled on this idea for The Wall Printer and has truly brought it to life to the point that it's even getting some attention from Elon Musk in the social media space. And in this episode, we talked everything from Paul's wall printer journey, shout out Paul Wall, the lessons and advice Paul has from many years of entrepreneurship in industries ranging from dog washing to baby bottles to things that Paul was able to license to Microsoft, Samsung, and Apple. And of course, some of the tips that Paul shares with students at UNC Wilmington, where he volunteers and mentors students at the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, as well as the Business School of Entrepreneurship. It is PB&J, Paul Barron and jokes. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with Paul Barron, the man who knows more about printing on walls than pretty much anybody you would be able to find out there in the world. Paul, awesome entrepreneur, amazing product. Really excited to dive into your story today. How you doing? Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Max. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your audience. Never one for lacking a few words to say about either myself or what I'm doing these days or what I've done in the past. I appreciate the opportunity.
Of course. And I'm going to cut you off right there. You are not allowed to say any more words for the rest of the interview. So thanks, Paul. No, I'm just kidding.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. That's good. I can't really, you know, God forbid I start off an interview normally for once, but nope.
Normal is highly overrated, Max. That's all right.
Oh, I'm with you. That's good. Where I might need to get that wall printed. But we're going to get into the wall printer story and Wall Printing USA. But before that, I know that you're a huge tennis buff. And actually, pretty early in your career, you were running a tennis center. What was that like from a managerial, young, entrepreneurial spirit standpoint?
The background to that is that I put myself through college financially, in addition to the good graces of my parents. I earned money by stringing tennis rackets for the athletic department. And I was a fairly decent tennis player myself through college. And even now, some 50 years thereafter, I still play competitively singles and doubles tennis. And it's just been a lifelong passion of mine. I got it from my dad, who also played pretty much until the time he passed. And it is a great lifelong sport, along with my other passion, which is swimming. But as far as the tennis goes, so my education and background is mathematics, and I always wanted to be a math teacher. That's what I really like, geometry and the logic of mathematics and the fact that math is kind of in everything we do, whether it's music, whether it's accounting, whether it's finance, whether it's just communication. There's an element of mathematics in pretty much everything. And I always enjoyed it, and I was always very good at it. So I, in fact, became a math teacher as my first job out of college. But I also had the love for tennis, and I had a friend who was out of work at the time that I got my first teaching job out of school, and we decided to open up a tennis shop, a sporting retail shop. Just to correct you, as you said, tennis center, it was a retail sporting goods shop.
I put that in there intentionally just to see if you'd correct me. Thank you. You've passed the test.
But it's only, I only half correct you, because the shop actually was successful and grew to two more tennis shops that we took over as concessions inside of indoor tennis centers in upstate New York, where my shop was.
I was too far advanced for my own good.
You were wise beyond your years or vision. But in any case, that became a real focus of mine, and I really enjoyed the business aspect of the shops, not the least of which, I guess, was due to the fact that it was a successful venture. But at the same time, not only financially, but also just personally, because it was something I was passionate about. But it also took my time away from the teaching. And in my third year of teaching, I was kind of given an ultimatum by the school district. I was a high school math teacher at the time, and it was my tenure year. And they said they liked me, they liked my teaching skills, but they also knew I had this outside interest of the retail shops that were growing. And they asked me to make a decision before granting me tenure. Did I want to really continue my teaching career, or did I want to devote my energy to the business aspect of what I had done on the side? And so I made the decision to go the business route, and I gave up teaching. And that was much to my parents' chagrin, because they were, of course, of the greatest generation out of World War II. And things that were safe and secure was something that they really valued a lot. And so my giving up a public service job such as teaching, with retirement benefits and all that that's accompanied with that, even though the world has certainly changed over the last several decades in terms of security and pensions and things like that. But still, that kind of rubbed them the wrong way. But it's the path I took, and they supported me totally. I just continued on that path, and I actually sold out my tennis shops after about 3 or 4 years, and then went on to some other things, which led my ongoing journey to opening up various different businesses in various sectors. I kind of fancy myself as being, at that point, on industry agnostic. The hats I learned early on that I liked to wear, and the ones that I learned I didn't like to wear, kind of shaped the direction that my life went. I didn't like managing people so much. I didn't like the administrative parts of things in terms of running businesses. I loved the sales and marketing. I loved identifying the customers that would add the highest value, not only to me or the products I was selling or delivering, but also the value it would bring to them and how it would enrich their lives, by buying my service or product as opposed to an alternative. And so that's really what happened to me over the years from that point forward.
And it started with stringing rackets. And I don't think stringing rackets gets talked about enough, but I got to imagine.
No, it definitely doesn't.
I got to imagine that's something that requires loads and loads of patience and attention to detail.
Yeah, it is kind of, I guess, some cross between knitting and pretty much anything else.
Probably knitting and tennis.
Knitting and tennis. But it is genuinely knitting a tennis racket. There are some things that you do learn, not only from the viewpoint of tennis, which of course is the low-hanging fruit. You learn about different tensions and how they can impact the way that you play the game and the way that the results of your strokes and the type of game you have. All can be helped or hurt by the string tension. And so if there's a lesson to be learned in that, but the way that you interact with people, the way that your relationships grow, that does have a great influence on whatever you do. And whether it's sales, whether it's product development, whether it's research, whether you're a doctor, an accountant, a dishwasher, makes no difference from stringing tennis rackets to any of those disciplines. It just goes to understanding the customer. That's the biggest lesson that came out of that, was who are you stringing that racket for? Today, who am I selling a wall printer to? Before this, it was, it went from there to, me working for other companies, because I wanted to learn what the corporate life was like at one point in my life, and to see what advantages there were to that. And having the kind of resources that you get from a big company. And then, of course, I learned also what I didn't like about that was how it took, 20 meetings and 15 decision makers to get anything done. And that brought me back down to the small business entrepreneurial kind of opportunities. And again, the hats that I wore best were sales, marketing, customer identification, bringing value to other people through the products and services that I promoted. And those products and services over the years that literally the last four decades is where I found myself and found my calling, if you will. Well, first I worked for a company, the last company I worked for, they had a competitor, a Russian company, whose products and technology, it was audio, video, communications technologies at the forefront of internet, telephone communications, video, and other solutions for navigation systems, all the software that rides inside devices that we take for granted right now, Skype video, or the video we have in Zoom. Skype specifically was technology developed by this Russian company that I licensed to Microsoft. GPS technology for Samsung devices that track you down, like the CSI TV shows let you know all too well that nothing is safe from being well known. The technology that sits on all the GPS chips inside telephones by Samsung was technology from this Russian company that I licensed to Samsung. And then every music clip you hear in an iPad, an iPod, an iPhone, that MP3 technology that sits inside the devices made by Apple. Again, this Russian technology that was licensed to Apple. And so this was a journey that helped me identify high-value customers for a foreign company whose services and products they could not articulate to the American audience as well as I could, and to identify who their high-value customers might be. So that's a run that was a wonderful relationship that I built for about 13 years. Until then, China came up in the world stage, and that was in, of course, Moscow's backyard. And I had done all I could for this Russian company. And so I phased myself out, even though we're still very friends, very good friends, and exchanged birthday and Christmas cards with one another. I went on to other things, and I started representing an Austrian baby bottle manufacturer that had a unique, innovative baby bottle to market in the United States and help.
I was going to guess that, exactly.
Yeah. That would be the logical next step.
Yeah, of course. I mean, how could you go any other direction?
That was it. It was destiny. And then there was a Chinese headband headphone for children, a media board from Israel, and then a self-service dog wash from Australia. These were all products that I identified as being fairly innovative, that either had little, no competition, or warranted a unique position in a market that maybe wasn't too overcrowded to have another player or a player when there was no such market. My favorite, though, is what I'm doing right now. After the last venture, which was this self-service Australian dog wash system, which I imported from Australia, and then I identified a U.S. manufacturer to manufacture it here, and then they ended up buying the company, which basically put me out of a job. But I'm not crying. I did okay financially in that.
Here's some serious tears there, but
tears of now I can just happily wash my dogs in these machines without worrying about who's going to buy them. But it was a great exercise in taking a pretty fairly expensive product, as opposed to a Chinese headband headphone that cost $4 from China. Now I had a self-service dog wash from Australia, and now a wall printing machine, each of which costs in the $25,000 range. So we're in a totally different market, totally different audience. But the common thread is that these were unique products that were innovative in their own right, but also had very little positioning in place in the US or Canadian or even South American markets. The difference between what I'm doing now and what I've done in anything in the past is I was always a hired gun in the past. And I did very well financially, but I was always working for somebody else. And back to my roots as my tennis shops, I never felt as good as when I did have my own business. In fact, for whatever it's worth, I'll pass along something that somebody said to me a very long time ago in one of those jobs that I took for another company, when I felt I wasn't treated fairly in the compensation I was getting. And the owner of the company said to me, because I knew how much money I was making the company in the sales I was doing and doing very well in my job. But I also saw that him and his son realized very large bonus checks at Christmas time. And I got a bonus check, which was very nice for me when I was in my 20s, but it was less than what I thought I deserved. And he took me aside and he said, "Paul, when you work for anybody but yourself, you will never be paid what you think you're worth. But when you work for me, I'll pay you more than anybody else will." And he was absolutely right, not only in what he said, and in the compensation I was getting, which I was in my 20s, I was making a good at the time, nearly six figures. And again, understand in reference point, I'm 70 now. So that was a pretty good salary 50 years ago. But I quit. as soon as he told me that, I turned in my resignation and I ended up going to work for a competitor, kind of on my own terms. And I was able to actually double my salary in the next year, doing half the work. So with that said, you know, you have to know your own capabilities and what makes you passionate about what you're doing and what makes you passionate about why you're doing it. And so with the wall printing machine, I came at a time when I, as you kind of picked up through this, you know, the few tears that were shed from the dog wash situation, working for somebody and not realizing the goals I had for the company, but passing them off to somebody else. I said, I'm not doing this anymore. He said, I actually just thought I'd retire. But then I always surf the internet. I always look at things. And I found this, I was actually approached by a company, a competitive company to mine now, that had a wall printing machine that asked me to represent them in the United States, just like all these other companies had done. And I said no, because I couldn't work out a deal where I would own part of the company. But then I was so much in love with what the potential for this product was, which is something I had never seen before, never heard about, a vertical printing machine that was like an inkjet printer, but vertically on walls, could do beautiful wall art, near photo quality images on any wall surface, indoors, outdoors, whether it was brick, wallboard, metal, tile, glass, didn't matter. So I did my homework and I started looking around and I found out that there are only 5 companies in the world that made these types of machines. And they were all overseas. The companies that manufactured this, there was one in Germany, 2 in China, 1 in India, 1 in Australia, but none here in North or South America. And so I reached out to all of them and tried to find out, you know, which was the best one. I'm kind of anal in this regard. I sent a company to China to kick the tires to see if it was a real company that could actually make X number of these a month if I was going to actually invest in this company and product. And so one of the 5 companies ticked all the right boxes for me. And I developed a relationship with them. We wrote an agreement that was mutually beneficial. And I bought all rights to North and South America from them. And that's where I am today, building out business opportunities for other people, bringing in these products, providing the training, the support. I translated everything out of Chinese to English, Spanish, French, Canadian, Portuguese, to be able to help the customers that I've identified could benefit from this product. And I'm creating business opportunities by giving them machines and exclusive territories. Not a franchise, although I do have some 15 years back there in my history of franchising experience. Not the guy who went out and bought himself a Dunkin' Donuts, a pest control company or something. I provided technology to franchise systems, how to manage their accounting and their customers with CRM products and technology. But I like the franchise model in some respects, but not in others. And so when I created this business, and again, it was something that it was a blueprint that I was able to create. I created business opportunities for people where we don't dip into their pockets for royalties or revenue. We don't ask them to use our name. And while they have the right to say, call themselves a wall printer, they create their own logo, their own company brand. They use their own website, their own Facebook page. We don't teach them how to market, although we do support them with videos and posts and images and things like that. But it's not a franchise. And that's where I am today. And that's, I think I brought you through the whole journey.
Exactly. We're into 4 interview slots. No, I'm just kidding. So let's dive into the wall printer journey, which is a sentence I'd always imagined I'd say, you know, ever since birth, I always thought that. No, it's a truly unique and creative and really cool and inspiring company. You mentioned that you heard about it, you did the research, lots of due diligence, and now you're very much involved in owning it, which is really, really awesome to see. What was your reaction when you first stumbled upon this idea of a vertical wall printer in the first place? That's pretty out there.
Yes, and maybe I can give it to you from my wife's perspective. She hears me in my home. I'm in my office, usually surfing the net or doing something, and she'll hear me. And one of the things that she hears inevitably in these gaps in my professional career, where I'm trying to figure out what does Paul want to do when he grows up, I'll say to her, "Hey, honey, come take a look at this. This is pretty cool." Well, rather than come into my office, which is what I had hoped she would do, and come and see what I was seeing, instead she runs and she cuts up my credit cards and hides the bank account. because she says, oh no, here we go again. He found something else he wants to sell. So that happened with the wall printer. When I first saw it, I just thought it was the coolest thing. And again, now friends and family, and even you who may fall into one of those buckets sometime, friends and family will say that I'm fairly normal in terms of at least my capitalist side and spending habits and purchasing history. You know, I mean, you know, you buy a car, you buy a tennis racket, you know, a watch, clothes, whatever. My habits are fairly mainstream, not really out there, to use your word on, you know, to describe something like a wall printing machine. But when I see something that I've never seen before, I kind of wonder, well, why not? Because I do think I'm kind of out there in the marketplace seeing what's out there. And so this was totally new. I had never seen anything like it. And it turns out that it is not new technology. It's been around for about 8 years. I started my company, The Wall Printer, here in the United States in November of 2019. And wall printing as a technology had been around for about 6 or 7 years. And there are about 500 wall printers, if you will, the machines and the people who use them out there worldwide, all confined into Southeast Asia, a little bit in India, a little bit in Russia, Europe. But for the most part, zero, I mean, literally zero in the United States or Canada, and none in South America at all. And so, again, I say to myself, you know, why, you know, have you never seen anything like that? And I did my homework, and it turned out that it was really difficult to support these machines without having availability of parts, training, inks, which is the most important thing in a printing machine, that are readily available for the machines themselves. And so while the technology began in China, they were the original ones. In fact, my company is the first company that invented this technology. I actually, which is very unusual for a Chinese company to allow co-inventors, but I actually own 3 patents with my Chinese partners in this. And so they had over 10 patents in Southeast Asia and also throughout Europe that they filed for the technology, and they were the first ones to do it. And then a German company came on who has a quality product, and no disrespect to anybody in the audience with German heritage or who also likes German products. I, in fact, drive a BMW, so I am very much, and I use Henkel knives for cooking. So I'm very much in favor of good quality products wherever they are, German or otherwise. But for apparently most products that say, especially technology, if it says made in Germany, they think it could be twice the price just by saying that. And sometimes it's warranted. You know, I'm not, there's no disrespect here.
Hey, as a Brandstetter and a mom's maiden name, Zucker, take no offense.
Yeah, good, because you shouldn't. It's really a sign of respect, but also bewilderment that sometimes it applies, sometimes it doesn't in the pricing scheme. And so in this particular case, you know, our printers are half the price of our German competitor. And we print at 1440 DPI. They can only print at 600 DPI. We have white ink. They do not, which is the single most valuable asset and the reason, probably the single most important decision maker that I had in terms of focusing on this particular product and this particular company is because we are able to apply white behind the primary colors used in printing, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. And what that does, in a nutshell, without getting technical about it, it kind of applies a primer behind the image so you can print on dark surfaces or glass or metal and have the image really pop out and the colors be vibrant. And you don't have to have like a big rectangular image. You can have just the image itself, and it'll really, really just pop out at you is the best expression. Don't mean to be redundant, but that's the only thing that fairly depicts.
No, you can pop out as much as you want.
Well, thank you.
We'll include pictures in the show notes and everything, but these, the pictures and the images, and I know you got some in your office as well, the wall printer prints truly are vibrant. They truly do pop out a ton. And so it's really cool about this, the secret white ink.
Yeah, the secret white ink. And you know, and we set expectations appropriately. It is not going to be the photo quality you can see on your computer or on your mobile phone when you take a picture, because this is wall art. It blows up to any size. And it retains near photo quality as long as you use the right digital image, which is a vector type image. Again, I don't want to get into technical stuff in this conversation, but suffice to say that it's mainstream graphics design using applications like Photoshop, Adobe Illustrator, CorelDRAW, all the tools of the trade for digital artists these days, even muralists. I mean, these days, any painter, any artist, before taking brush to paint to the wall or to the canvas, usually does some experimentation and some brainstorming of their creative side digitally these days. And so we capture that digital image and then can blow it up to any size. And, you know, unless you come up and you scrutinize, you know, a picture and you say, oh, I can't see the eyes and the seagull flying in the background of that image of the ocean or something, you really can't tell that this is not just a beautiful near photo quality piece of art right. that you can put on the wall.
I promise with my entire heart that I will leave your seagulls alone. I'm sure they're beautiful.
They are.
But when you think about, you've done an incredible job over the past couple of years turning this thing from probably at the time was a mere possibility to a real business that's developing a following and building clients and, you know, refining the final product. That's a tongue twister. But what would you say has been your biggest focus with launching this thing that has paid off the most so far?
I would like to fancy myself as kind of being a fairly intelligent person.
Was the most humble and modest thing I've ever heard.
That's but at the same time, I started this business in November of 2019, got my first shipment of machines in December of 2019. And then in January of 2020, the world stopped with COVID. And here I was importing Chinese products at the time that COVID came around. So that thinking that I'm a pretty bright guy quickly faded away. And I got a lot of I told you so's from a lot of people. And but me being the way I am, and I will not accept that kind of a perspective on something that I had such confidence in, I said, screw it, I'm all in. And I started hiring people when everybody else was laying off everybody. And I built up my team and we didn't sell anything. But my first hire was my social media and marketing manager, who was right out of college at University of North Carolina here in Wilmington. And he started creating images and posts and videos and things of our printer going. And we decided to identify, well, who wants this? And, you know, who will buy this when they're able to actually come and see it? Since here in the United, it's not like buying a Starbucks or a McDonald's or a Mr. Plumber, if there is such a thing as a Mr. Plumber.
right in the same category as Starbucks and McDonald's.
There you go. But I mean, these are businesses that you can see. You can walk down the street. You know, you could decide, do I want to be in food service? Do I want to be a plumber or an electrician or lawn care? You know, or healthcare? Do I want to, you know, do these kinds of things? You can see, touch, and feel those types of businesses, and then compare them to other ones that exist and decide, is that for me? You could not do that with a wall printer because nobody knew what it was. So we spent a good 10 months while COVID was resolving itself, or at least somewhat, and until people were willing to travel, which was now a year ago, after we spent the first 10 months just going ahead and just seeding the water, so to speak, showing videos, you know, using social media, Facebook, Instagram, you know, TikTok, LinkedIn, using those vehicles to let people know that wall printing exists, that there is such a thing that will print images on walls. Would you like to learn more about it? And so we did that for a good amount of time until then all of a sudden some people said, where can I see this? And the only place to see it was Wilmington, North Carolina, in our warehouse and showroom. And so now people started, especially on the East Coast, started coming here from, you know, Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, Texas, Virginia, the nearby states, and they bought it. And, you know, now fast forward your question, you know, a year later, here we are 2 years, not quite 2 years into the business. And we have about 50 markets that we've sold, because we do sell exclusive territories to help those people who are willing to take the risk and become a wall printer. We want them to be the only ones who become a wall printer. So we serve them, and with providing them with an exclusivity to a territory. There's the similarity to the franchise model, except that we don't obligate them to call themselves anything or to do anything special other than sell services. And we promise not to sell anybody else in that territory except them, wall printing machines. And so we've got about 50 markets that have opened up now with people that are out there at various levels of their business. Some have been doing it for a year. Some of them just waiting for their machines to be delivered. Of course, delivery is about 6 to 8 weeks if we don't have a machine in stock, because the supply chain still is a little creepy and slow right now out of Asia or anywhere else to get anything. Toilet paper is not the only thing you have trouble getting off the shelves. Wall printers are a difficult product to get as well.
I was going to say, it's like two peas in a pod.
Just like. But here we are. I'm very grateful for not only the team that I built. We've got 10 full-time people working now And so I was able to employ people through this crisis of COVID and build a team that's a real good, cohesive, loyal team that have really supported the new customers that are coming on that are, I'm sure, scared that they're entering into something that nobody else has, they've gone where no man has gone before, so to speak. You know, we try to reward that confidence and that faith in being the first kid on the block to do something with going overboard with training, support. Our support is free to our customers. We don't charge for support. We don't charge for training. Everything is built into the cost of our machines. We take care of all the, you know, all the logistics of everything. Anyway, that's where we are today, Max.
I think that's one of the most exciting spaces to be in as an entrepreneur is when you're truly pioneering a space, whether it be toilet paper or wall printing. It's so exciting to hear about 50 markets so far, 10 full-time employees. You mentioned the need to educate customers and consumers, which is so big when you're in a new industry like this. What advice do you have for anybody that's creating something and trying to get the word out about something that consumers might have not even conceived of before?
Well, this is kind of a great question, Max, and it really just really points to Entrepreneurship 101. And what I mean by that, because it is a great question, but the answer is everybody that's going to do anything, and I don't care what it is, whether you're going to develop a new software application or a new hardware device or, you know, a bicycle or you want to be in the business of selling food or developing a new chicken recipe, whatever it is that you want to do, make sure that you're solving a real problem. Make sure that you're giving something of value to somebody that adds value to their lives, that gives them a reason beyond the benefits. You know, every car has a wheel. Every car has four tires on it. You know, those are features, not benefits. You want to be able to do something that gives you benefits. You know, for some people in a car, it might be the, you know, the comfort of the type of leather or the fact that it's a convertible or not, or that it can go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds versus 10. Even though there's a very fine line between features and benefits in that kind of an example, but the benefit is, do you like speed? Do you like getting from here to there, you know, quickly in a car? You know, do you like that comfort of a 6 or 8 speaker sound system around you when you're driving? You know, while the features, the benefit to you is that you like music. You like to hear, you know, a good sound system, whether you're at home or in a concert or in your car. So again, giving somebody a solution to their need or their problem or something they want. You know, with the wall printer, you know, I look at it strictly as a business opportunity, that I want people who, and they could be painters or construction workers or general contractors or artists, photographers, people who are in what I call an industry of adjacency, where this could add revenue to the same customers they have now and just add another way to deliver their art. Or when somebody goes into a house and paints the walls, you know, all eggshell white, and then they find out that one of the children is into ballet and another one is into Power Rangers and the father is into football and the mother is into, you know, soccer or whatever. There's an opportunity to put wall art on the walls of each of their rooms that they relax in and will live in. And same thing goes for businesses. You know, an Italian restaurant wants a nice picture of, you know, of Tuscany or something on the wall, or pizza coming out of an oven that looks mouthwatering. You know, it's all about art. It's all about the location and all that. So you've got to be somebody who likes those relationships and likes to identify those people who want something that you can deliver. And the wall printer just gives something else. You know, we don't take the food off the table of artists. You know, we just give them a different way to express and deliver their art onto walls quicker and more reliably than maybe they could otherwise by taking paint to brush to the wall. You know, so again, the whole entrepreneurship journey is solving a problem. What does somebody want that they can't get without you, without what you're giving them, and whether it be a service or a product? And if you can do that, and you can raise your hand and say, I'm willing to take the risk, both financially, and I always call it time, talent, and treasure. Those are the three things you need to do anything. You know, career-wise or professionally, you need the time to devote to it. You need the talent to be able to actually deliver on it, and you need the treasure, you need the funds. And that sometimes the funds might be, what does it cost to buy a wall printer? Sometimes you don't need money to buy a wall printer. You know, you can get it financed, but you need the funds to feed your family and put gas in the car to get to that customer site, and to have the insurance you need. You know, there are other expenses in a business besides just the products and service, which always drives me crazy when the 150 inquiries we get a day, which is what we get every day now, 150 people, and 140 of them want to know what's the price. And I try to tell them, well, if you're too concerned about the price of the machine rather than how much you can make using the machine and what it can do for you and your family and your life, you know, you're asking the wrong questions.
I love your, we'll call them Paulisms, maybe Baronisms, whichever you prefer, but time, talent, and treasure. And then I also love the industry of adjacency, or industries of adjacency, because that's so true. This is something that could totally supplement or complement things that are already out there, approaches to art and design that are already out there, but add a new way to express yourself, which begs the question, what is the most common way that people are using the wall printer so far?
Good question. And it's really, I'd say if I was going to give you a numerical answer, it would be 50-50 between residences and commercial enterprises. And then, you know, of course, within the commercial, you might lump in schools, hospitals, doctor's offices, things like that, along with, you know, the restaurants and those types of businesses that you normally think about. Even we just got requests for law from law office for a big mural in a conference room from one of our wall printers, because we only service the machines here. We don't provide the services. It's one of the benefits to our wall printers is that any inquiries that come in of those 150 that we get every day, some subset of those are people who want a wall printing, especially when they find out it's not your $50 or $100 desktop printer, but it costs $25,000. Then they say, well, you know, I'm not going to go and buy a wall printer, but hey, I've got a wall that needs printing. I need some wall art on it. So we satisfy those people by introducing them to the local wall printer, if one exists, or perhaps asking for a referral to somebody who would be willing to spend $25,000 for a business. But again, to answer your question, in my roundabout way, so 50-50 between residences and commercial, we do have a lot of people who have purchased wall printers as a fresh business opportunity. Everything from mom and dad to grandma and grandpa whose son or grandchildren are coming out of high school or college and don't know what they want to do with their lives yet. And they're willing to, for the price of a car, invest in something to help them start a business hands-on, to learn the skills of business more generally, just like I did with my tennis shops 50 years ago. You know, sure, I was passionate about tennis at the time, but I really learned all the things about business and buying products and selling products and pricing things and dealing with customers and everything else you need to deal with when you have a business. So the same thing goes for a wall printer and the value it has to people in their own professional journey. You know, I'd say it really also depends on who's buying it. So when we do have somebody who has an existing business, and let's say they're a painter or a general contractor, well, they'll be mining their customers. And if those customers happen to be commercial or residential places, those are the kind of customers that will want a wall printing on a wall, indoors or outdoors. And then, of course, there's the whole artistic communities. We have a lot of requests for people who just want, you know, to beautify downtown areas. And there's plenty of building owners who are willing to give an ugly brick wall, or, you know, some wall that has some siding on it, over to an artist to paint a mural. And while traditionally that's been done by hand muralists, you know, we could do it in a fraction of a time. That's our customer basis, or really a wide range of residential, business, buildings, downtown, renovations, things like that.
Knowing your customer base is obviously super important. And the same thing applies in the podcast world, where it's really important to know who your listeners are. For example, I know that you watch Hello Kitty every single morning in your footy pajamas, and it's okay. I'm not judging you at all. If you are interested in starting a podcast where you can connect with your listeners, connect with potential customers, connect with prospects, the list goes on and on. Connect with those people and expand your business in a very fun and helpful audio format. But you don't want to spend all the time it takes behind the scenes to make that happen. Hit me up. I will be watching Hello Kit. No, I'm just kidding. Hit me up at max@maxpodcasting.com. I will help you save time with your high-quality podcast. That's max@maxpodcasting.com. Now, back to Paul, where Shall we print some walls? Ooh, that sounded weird. All right, let's print our walls to a... I don't know if that's a saying, but it is now. We'll print our walls to a fan favorite segment called the Wild Business Shoutout of the Week.
The Wild Business Shoutout of the Week!
Can't wait. Can't wait.
Thank you. Might need a giant harmonica wall printed. But Wild Business Shoutout of the Week. This is where we talk about a creative marketing campaign, something advertising, buzz marketing that caught our attention. And it just so happens, at the time of this recording, literally within the past 24 hours, your product was liked on Twitter by Elon Musk, which doesn't happen. You might think every single one of my guests has that same thing happen, but no, it's not a common thing, but so cool. Can you share what the past 24 hours with this flurry of social likes and following has been like?
As I've mentioned maybe more than once, I'm not a youngster. I've lived through the whole internet social media craze, and it hasn't really touched me too much other than the fact that, you know, I share news of my dogs and where I go out to eat every now and then with my family and friends on Facebook. But I don't do a lot on social media personally, but I understand its value and live it day in and day out on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, Reddit, all the other channels that can introduce a product or service to customers or potential customers. And so that's what we do for the most part in terms of advertising and promotion. And every once in a while, from somehow, you know, I mean, we've been doing this for 2 years now, and I've just touched the tip of the iceberg. I think maybe we've got about, I don't know, maybe a couple of million views, which is pretty cool, I think. But at the same time, you know, there's 300 million people in the US, and I own all rights to, and I'm selling into Canada, the United States, South America. So when I say 2 million people have seen videos of my products, you know, that's impressive maybe on some level, but still it shows me the potential that's still yet to come. And so whenever somebody sees it and it has an impact, that then, you know, kind of lets me understand a little bit what the power of social media is. And so, as you said yesterday, there was a website that took one of my videos and really liked it, and they shared it with Elon Musk on his Twitter feed, and he looked at it and he liked it. And now he's got 50 million followers. That's like a staggering number to me. And I guess, you know, I've got experience, you know, in media and marketing. You know, you've heard that, you know, when Oprah Winfrey recommends a book in her book club or something, all of a sudden bookstores are sold out because everybody runs to buy it because Oprah liked the book. Well, nothing really hit home to me in the social media world of a comparable nature until this. So in the past 24 hours, as you said, we've had over 2 million views of our video, which again is just about maybe 1.5 times what we've done in the past 2 years in terms of, and we've done a pretty good job of social media marketing over the last 2 years for a product that nobody's ever seen, nobody's ever heard about, for people to recognize and like and view. But to do that in a 24-hour period and have 2 million people view it, and then as a result of the people who view it, of course, a subset of those then went to that extra step and said, that's pretty interesting. Let me Google the wall printer or wall printing and see what I come up with. And so we've been absolutely flooded the last 24 hours with people inquiring about this. And hopefully we'll get, you know, if I can get one or two sales out of it, well, great. But the bottom line is, it just blew me away with the power of traction that some of these sites can have. This only happened once before on some scale, and it wasn't really as much as somebody with the kind of technology cachet as an Elon Musk, but somebody posted to a Reddit site one of our posts one time of our wall printer printing. And it was a site that happened to have about 19 million, I think, followers or something on Reddit. And all of a sudden, within like a 2 hour period of time, because it was totally different than actually being in a Twitter feed that people can actually go back and scroll through and see, you know, we got the same kind of reaction in a very small amount of time from a Reddit post from a very well-traveled site. But this was pretty cool. And we're still riding on it. I've got another screen on my desk that shows visitors on my website. And typically we have at any one time, maybe 5 to 10 people on the website. For the last 24 hours, it's been in the 20 to 40 range on any given minute. And it's been nonstop for, for now, going on 36 hours. So yeah, thanks, Elon.
Exactly. Stepping up big. I'm sure in a matter of time, your website will be Elon's homepage as well. So,
well, I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for the phone call, and I'm waiting for him to ask me to barter a wall printer for a Tesla. Then we'll see what happens.
Exactly. That's a good business there. So
that's right.
It just goes to show that if you have a product, whether it's in the technology space or something else, and it has just really cool, like literally cool or fascinating value that people look at and go, oh, wow, what is that? What is that? You have to create some sort of video content and capture this and get it out there, because you never know. Like, it's so hard to truly make things go viral. You can't really hack that system or orchestrate it the right way. But the more you get it out there, the more chance it is for people to see it. And hey, who would have thought that with your long history of Twitter prowess, Elon Musk would be your number one fan now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess there's the expression, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
And you know Elon Musk.
And yeah, and even though I don't know him, just the fact that that connection presented itself at a opportune time, you know, and I guess that goes to the point of entrepreneurship again, you know, just putting yourself out there, you know, doing something that you like doing and, you know, sharing it with others. And you just never know what that, you know, that pebble in the pond is going to ripple effect to make something happen that is what your goal was or could be.
All for the metaphors and alliteration, and we'll have this pebble turn into a rock that skips its way on home. Let's wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. You ready for it?
Sure, go. Give me your best shots.
All right, let's get wild. These are all about things that print on wall. No, they're not. Tennis. If you could play a singles match versus any professional tennis player in history, who would it be?
Jimmy Connors.
You can't say tennis. You can't say swimming. What is I call them a weird talent that you have. So maybe it's something just around the house that you have a knack for. Maybe it's juggling. Maybe it's a memory trick, but a weird talent or party trick that you have.
Well, if you knew my dogs, getting them to sit or stay would be the weird talent that I possess in my home.
Well, I appreciate you not telling me to sit and stay with my questions today. I really appreciate it. You also have a knack for searching and discovering potential new products or businesses, things to invest in online. What's the high-level way that something just jumps at you and grabs you? Is there a common trend when you see something and you're like, ooh, I might want to go into business with that?
As I mentioned earlier, I just look for, you know, what problem does this solve? Does it have potential? There are plenty of things I'm still trying to figure out. You know, I don't get NFTs yet. I don't get cryptocurrency yet.
I'm with you.
You know, but I know people who make, I know a lot of people, not a lot, but I know a few close friends that are making quite a bit of money, you know, doing stuff with that. I can't even begin to describe what they do. But they, as much as they try to describe it to me.
I just know it's non-fungible, whatever that means.
Yeah, it is non-fundable. So yeah, you know, being able to sell a digital cat or own a digital cat, and then sell it for you know, a quarter of an ETH to me is just, it makes no sense at all. Yeah. in language or currency. In any case, there is you know, I just look for things that just say, wow, I've never seen anything like that, and then. Is there a reason you've never seen anything like that? You know, because it's really useless, or does it bring a smile, you know, to you? Because if you had it or did something with it, like the wall printer, put a nice picture on a wall that otherwise you could not put a picture on a wall, you know, would that give you some kind of pleasure? And so that's what I look for.
And then last one, you have a true passion for math and mathematics, which is a lot of, which I know is the same thing, but which I know is a lot of people's worst enemy. What would you say is one piece of advice that can help you with any level of math?
Oh, go balance your checkbook and stop whining.
Oh, that's fantastic. You really cashed in there. Thank you so much, Paul. This has been terrific. Really, really appreciate your story. Wall printer and beyond. So, so cool and energizing what you do and how you approach things. Where is the best place for people to connect with you personally and to connect with the wall printer or Wall Printing USA?
I appreciate that. And I appreciate this opportunity to get to know you, Max, and to talk to you a bit. And your questions were great. And the conversation seemed to flow a lot quicker than the hour that passed. I hope some people get something out of this. You know, one of the things we didn't talk about, and I'm not going to start a new conversation now, but one of the things that I value more than anything else are the relationships that I built over the years. And that's the one thing that if I ever give advice to anybody about anything, it's build relationships early in your life and then hold on to them and remember them, because, you know, there's the expression, you know, be nice to the people on your way up because they're the same people you're going to see on the way down. Nothing could be closer to the truth in any world of entrepreneurship or anybody's life path. So building relationships. And so that's my long-winded way, as usual, of answering your question now, that if somebody wants to get a hold of me, I'm always happy to connect on LinkedIn. This isn't an advertisement for LinkedIn, but it is a professional network. I'm not going to ask anybody to become a Facebook friend because I reserve that just strictly for close family and friends, those relationships that I've spent 60 years building. But LinkedIn is a professional network, and anybody who wants to get into the workforce or get connected to people or just, you know, may need to ask somebody a question about something, it's a great place to be. So you can find me on LinkedIn, search Paul Barron. I'm sure I'll come up. I'll be one of the 4,000 Paul Barrons that are out there.
Yeah, I actually thought I was interviewing a different Paul Barron today, but that's besides the point.
You get what you get. And the other thing is the wall printer. I hope my people have been doing their job. So if you go to thewallprinter.com, or you just search the wall printer or wall printing, hopefully you will find me and find our website and our business. But thewallprinter.com is our website. And we do have, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube channels and all that kind of stuff. If you're a glutton for punishment and want to see lots of videos of walls being painted by not only us, but by our customers and those 50 or so wall printers that are out there today making beautiful wall art, one wall at a time, please reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you. And if I can be of any help to you, whether it be for actually a wall printing business or just anything that you're doing in your life journey, I'm always happy to talk. I'm a mentor at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington's business school. I like helping people along their paths and trying to answer questions when I know the answers. And I also like telling people I don't know when I don't know. And so you can expect that as well.
Perfect. And I think that could be a new potential slogan for you. You know, the old idiom of watching paint dry, I think for you watching the wall printer do its thing and dry or just finalize is a much more exciting option. And they're seriously beautiful. So you've really stumbled onto something here, Paul. Thank you so much. And
last
thing, it's going to be hard to top your quote about balancing your checkbook, but final thoughts. It could be a quote, a line, your impression of the wall printer. No, I'm just kidding. But whatever you want, send us home here.
Send you home. Let's see. I'll give you the same quote I have on my Facebook page for my family and friends that I mentioned. I'd never belonged to any club that would have somebody like me as a member. So that's my quote. But in reality, my favorite quote of all time is one that I created a long time ago. I think it's attributed to me. If somebody else did come up with it first,
I think it might have been the other Paul Barron. But the other Paul Barron
might have done this. But people don't really care how much you know. They want to know how much you care. That's my favorite quote of life and business.
And my new favorite quote of life and business is, go balance your checkbook and stop whining. Thank you so much, Paul, for sharing your amazing story, amazing knack for identifying clever niche businesses and turning them into successes. And I think it's safe to say, as you alluded to, that not only are we host and guest or interviewee, we are friends and family now as well. I think blood brothers, safe to say. And thank you, Wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite listening app. And tell a friend about the podcast. It goes a long way. And if you are looking for ways to support this podcast, give back, the best thing and nicest thing you can do is tell your friend about the podcast. So make sure to call them, wake them up every single morning, and let them know there's a new episode out. Well, at least on Wednesdays. You can also find us on Good Pods, where there are so many good pods. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!